Congressman Larson.
Great to see you, Brad. I also worked it with an auto body.
You did?
Back in the day.
How about
absolutely.
That? Say that again.
I worked it with an auto body for Solon, and then Howard. Howard was in college when I first started there during summers, and then at nights, too. And putting tire black on those tires wasn't exactly the best job in the world, but you learn. What a great family. You're right.
Oh.
More than 90 years, and you couldn't get better quality from them. Just terrific. Muhammad Ali came there in 1968, pulled in a gold Tornado. He was looking for, well, you remember from WINF, who was the Dean report, who was the sportscaster? Arnold Dean.
Arnold Dean, yeah.
Arnold Dean.
Yeah,
he was going on his show to explain, you know, why he was a conscientious objector.
So he pulled in.
Pulled in the
wow.
woman on the body. It was an unbelievable day.
Imagine Muhammad Ali pulling into your business.
Bundini Brown in
Bundini
the car.
Bundini Brown.
Oh, my God.
Great stuff.
Rumble, young man, rumble.
Well, Congressman John Larson is in our Touchpoints Rehab interview. Chair Congressman, good morning.
Morning, Dan.
Great to have you here.
Good to be with you, Brad. How are the Yard Goats doing, Dan?
The Yard Goats doing very well. They are
packing them in.
Big crowds packing them in, and they rallied yesterday to win. Now, you're, of course, pursuing this effort to lower the eligibility age for Medicare. So let's start there by
sure.
talking about this with our audience.
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, Brian Higgins out of New York, our own Joe Courtney from the 2nd Congressional District, you know, Joe was the chairman of the Health Committee here in the General Assembly before he went down to Congress. You know, both extraordinarily knowledgeable. So what we were looking at, everybody understands that the Affordable Care Act, as important and as good as it was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination and needed to be fixed. So we have been saying all along, look, it's not just enough to say, you want to resist the repeal and what is, I think, an ill-advised replacement of Obamacare. You have to have solutions yourself. And part of that solution that Brian, Joe, and myself came up with was to make sure that you could buy in to the program, to the Affordable Care Act, and by buying into Medicare, starting at age 50. Well, why age 50, you say? Well, age 50 to 64 would allow this very young group, from a Medicare standpoint, to be able to buy into the program. And what the Kaiser Foundation found, that in buying in for the program, when we say buy-in, meaning that it's going to be no additional cost to Medicare, this is going to be people who, once they reach age 50 to 64, can buy into the program, who in many cases are the ones who, if they get let out of work early, if they're in transition between the time that they retire till they get to Medicare, find themselves almost on an island, and the costs are almost prohibitive. In every study, it's the largest cost group. So we thought that if we could lower costs, give people a choice to access a program that is universal coverage. I mean, there's no problem with pre-existing conditions. There's no problem with lifetime caps, which are two of the most important things of the Affordable Care Act. This would give a younger group of people, but old in terms of their employer status, the opportunity to get a quality program. Bottom line, it costs less. It's a greater access, greater quality of care. Most doctors all throughout the country and the region accept Medicare. It is our gold standard for providing health insurance to the elderly and a number of people. And everywhere I go, Brad, you know, and Dan, and do these forums, so many 50 and above heads will start to shake. So many employers begin to look at you differently as they look at their spreadsheet and see what it costs to keep you on for insurance. And here's people still vital and able to contribute. But when the green shades take a look at them, they're saying, well, we're carrying this person. So we think with the ability for people to opt into a program, totally their choice, and with the ability for them to receive benefits under Obamacare or whatever benefits their employer might provide for them, they're going to receive an enormous break in the program, and it provides a great transition. Now, we also fixed the Affordable Care Act in terms of making sure there's reinsurance for catastrophic care, making sure that there's risk corridors that are in there, and making sure that the benefits are more generous, because there is a cliff, as you recall, where people fell off, et cetera. And that needed to be fixed. All of that we fix as well. But two other important things. Number one, we allow for what is called volume discounts. As you both know, the veterans, the VA, negotiates directly for their prescription drug costs. Why should Medicare do the same for all of our seniors? And that volume discount alone will drop costs by 24%.
Wow.
Imagine
wow.
that. So
Whoa.
24% yeah. because of the volume discounts that they'll be able to achieve for the population. And then the other thing, and this isn't talked about enough, I know you do such a great job, Brad, and have forever with seniors, but the fraud that still exists in Medicare and Social Security, and this is an area, again, where both Democrats and Republicans can come together. Anyone who defrauds a program like Medicare, a lot of it's inefficiency and waste, but it's estimated that it's around $50 to $60 billion annually. $50 to $60 billion annually. So with this proposal, what we're saying is fix the Obamacare, allow a greater option for people 50 to 64, make sure that you negotiate for volume discounts, and go after the fraud. We actually put more money into Medicare. So this proposal doesn't cost the American citizen anything. The person who's opting in is paying for it. And what are the benefits? Well, the insurer group now, assuming you can stay on your policy to age 27, age 26 under your parents' policy, the risk now is between 27 and 49.
Right.
That will drive down the cost dramatically of insurance there and allow companies to offer other incentives for wellness and staying healthy. As well as the group 50 to 64 is a younger group going into Medicare and will help drive those costs and smooth out those edges as well. So we think we have a win-win-win on four fronts, and we're going to push this extraordinarily hard when we get back there. We think it's a common-sense, practical solution. We hope we can get in front of Secretary Price and also in front of President Trump. Because I think these are some of the kind of the common sense, practical ideas where you can bring both sides together and solve a problem.
First District Congressman John Larson appears on our program frequently now, and we enjoy having him here. And also on the line this morning, Daniel, Congressman Joe Courtney joining John and the two of us. Congressman, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Brad. And you got, you know, North Central Connecticut and Eastern Connecticut. You got the state surrounded.
From the 2nd District. Congressman, good morning. Dan Lovallo. Congressman, explain to us, and Congressman Larson has also talked about it, your perspective on this effort and this plan to lower the Medicare eligibility age to 50.
So, you know, I think we're all at a place right now where, you know, we're just exhausted with the sort of, you know, trench warfare surrounding the healthcare issue. And I think the whole country wants to move past, you know, where we've been for the last actually a few years or so, and look at common sense ways to address where the real problems are, you know, that still exist in the healthcare marketplace. So over the weekend, I was down in Clinton. I was talking to a guy who's in his mid-50s. You know, he's in a place where he's ready to retire a little bit earlier, but he's been looking at the, you know, options that he has through the Connecticut Healthcare Exchange for somebody, again, who's in his mid-50s. And the prices are high. I mean, there's just no question. I mean, they are, even under the Affordable Care Act, there's a 3-to-1 age rating band with for people who are older. So, I mean, if you look at a gold plan, for example, it's about $13,000 for just the premiums, and that doesn't include the out-of-pocket deductibles. The bill that John and I are working on basically says let's use, you know, a tried and true program, Medicare, the most popular health insurance in America, hands down, that, it, you know, operates much more efficiently and is about 40% cheaper than the type of plan that that gentleman, you know, was describing to me. And, you know, when I gave him a quick outline of the bill that John and I are working on, I mean, he practically tackled me. He was, you know, so excited about the ability to get that kind of plan. Medicare is also portable. You can travel anywhere in the country with it, and it's accepted. You know, unlike some of the network plans that are sold through the exchange, which, you know, you've got to really be careful about making sure that providers are even covered under them. So, I mean, that's just one little example. Somebody, you know, on the street, you know, pays close attention to this and sees this. It's just a logical, common sense way to fix the part of the market that really is the most troubled.
So how would the apparatus be set up so that you're paying into the system? Who are you paying? How would it work?
So the Department of Health and Human Services, Center for Medicare Services, operates the Medicare program. They, you know, basically take in all different kinds of revenue with the existing Medicare program today, which is, you know, payroll tax revenue, the premiums that people pay, you know, the Part B premiums and the Part A premiums, and there are some small deductibles in Medicare as well, which they have to track. So actually, I mean, there's a very well-established operating system that Medicare has, and this would just really be another, you know, tweak to the system that would operate based on premiums that people pay, like that gentleman I described who would just pay it directly into CMS. And again, people pay premiums into Medicare today, as well as if there's subsidies that people qualify for because of income under the ACA, you know, those can just be redirected, you know, from the plans that now receive those subsidies, you know, Blue Cross, Anthem, Connecticut, and it would just go to CMS. Again, the one thing that the Congressional Budget Office and Congressional Research Service definitely confirm is that, you know, that program operates very efficiently. And, you know, in terms of, again, the straight operation of, you know, money coming in and premium payments going out, that's not where there's fraud problems in Medicare. It's more with the payments to different providers who game the system. And that's another provision that John's bill and my bill have, which is to really beef up the fraud, you know, tracking systems and protections so that, you know, there's more savings that we can, you know, plow back into what we want, which is to provide good care for people.
Congressman Courtney, do you believe you and Congressman Larson can get this? I mean, have you got enough help down there to get something like this through? Dan and I have been looking at it. I think this would be tremendous, a tremendous forward bolt, really.
Well, I said, I think, you know, after the John McCain's vote in the Senate the other night, you've seen a really, I think, pretty interesting and impressive, you know, bubbling up of people on both sides of the aisle saying, you know, it's time to stop swinging for the fences, you know, with every vote on healthcare. Why don't we start doing some singles and doubles, you know, and really look at, you know, really smart ways that we can do fixes to the system. And so I think there's a great appetite for this. And I know John's talked to some folks on the other side of the aisle from Pennsylvania and others. And again, this is one that, you know, when you look at it, we're not dealing with, you know, changing big budget impact. I mean, this thing is budget neutral. And because it's all paid for, if people want to use it. And and again, I think that's what people are really hungry for in terms of, you know, and not just in the public, but also I think down in D.C., I think there's an exhaustion level about, you know, the as I said, swinging for the fences every time people want to talk about health care.
Now, Congressman, you mentioned that illustration, that gentleman in his late 50s who's thinking about retiring, and then he looks at perhaps going on the Connecticut Health Exchange, and he sees the cost.
Yeah.
This cost under Medicare would be lowered because the volume would increase. How would it lower the costs?
So, again, if you when we were, you know, running the traps on this bill, We went back to the Congressional Budget Office, which actually has a pretty good system for tracking the sort of global cost of Medicare per enrollee. So if you're in the system today over 65, they can tally up or calculate, you know, what the true cost is for per beneficiary from, you know, people age 65 to 105. And for people in that age group, it's roughly about $11,000 a year is the total cost. What CBO told, you know, Congressman Higgins and John and myself was that they actually feel that because it's a healthier population, 50 to 65, that their analysis shows that the cost would be closer to about It's like $8,300, something like that.
Exactly.
And so, you know, this stuff is, there's actually pretty solid data that they can run the numbers in terms of calculating what a premium would be, which again would have no negative impact on the solvency of the Medicare program.
The Kaiser Family Foundation also has done, and they're
That's
probably
right.
one of the gold standards in terms of looking at the costs of healthcare, not only the cost but the quality and the type of program. They see this as a home run also,
right.
and it's a great way for people. And what group is more anxiety ridden, Dan, than when you reach starting at age 50?
No question.
Think about
yep.
this retirement. When you see your employer looking at you slightly differently, I mean, this is a great
right.
opportunity.
Yep.
Congressman John Larson and Congressman Joe Courtney, two of the driving forces behind this new addition to Medicare, 50 and above. When Dan and I first heard it from you, and I'm so glad that the two of you are here today, this can redo the whole cost of some of this
yeah.
insurance.
It really can, and I think that once people settle in, Dan and I were talking during the break, once people start focusing on solutions instead of partisanship or ideology, then they say, well, wait a minute. What are the costs associated with this? And when they find out the costs are lower, when you look at this anxious group of people, especially between 50 and 65, waiting for that transition to Medicare, and you provide them the transition and a path that's going to give them quality, accessible, affordable, and portable insurance, they go, well, doesn't that make sense? And when the integrity of the program, meaning Medicare, is only going to be enhanced, and with more money going into the Treasury than coming out, we look at this as a real feasible solution to the problem.
Congressman Courtney, let me ask you this, and Congressman Courtney and Congressman Larson are in our Touch Points Rehab interview chairs. How do you cut through the special interests who have a vested interest in the status quo, who feel they'll be affected by this? How do you do that in Congress, Congressman Courtney?
Well, certainly, first of all, I think the reaction from the provider community, you know, the hospitals, and John and I are doing a press conference on this issue later this morning at a hospital, at Manchester Hospital. But, docs, you name it, across the board, they're used to Medicare. I mean, they really, you know, Medicare, they have sometimes complaints, but the fact is that, it's a tried and true system. It's, I don't know, it was 1965 it passed, so. It's well over 50 years old now, and so I actually think, you know, that piece of the healthcare system, you can check the box. I don't think there's going to be, you know, big blowback in terms of, this concept in that area. And what I think is also interesting, and John can chime in too, is that I think in the insurer community, this 50 to 65 individual market slice of the system is the most challenging for them, and to the extent that there's an option out there that kind of takes the drama out of the insurance market for those folks, the insurance companies, and as John knows, also they do some of the administrative work in the Medicare system. That's been the case since back in 1965. Also, you never know. There's always going to be folks out there that are angling for the best deal possible. But I'm not really that you know, sort of worried that we're going to run into a buzzsaw of opposition on this. And, I mean, John has a perspective as well on this, but I actually feel that this thing is not going to be met with the, you know, the special interest wall of opposition that so many other proposals have run into.
Especially thinking in the area of volume discounts, and because the military has done this so successfully, that for the Medicare population, and there's been countless number of bills that have come before Congress with respect to this, but we're long overdue, and people are looking for costs. Now, in fairness to the pharmaceutical companies, I would also be in favor of those manufacturers, those American manufacturers, their scientists, their chemists, the people that do all this hard work, extend their patents. You know, give the volume discounts to the seniors and let the American-made manufacturer make out. No one's looking here, you know, to gore anyone's ox. What we're looking at is to make sure that Americans have the prescription drugs that their doctors are recommending to them at a cost that they can afford. And so I agree with Joe. I think we're going to have great opportunity.
Boy.
I never discount, you know, the big interests that are up there. But if we can bring people together for a common sense solution, we think this is even Paul Krugman in the New York Times is writing about the fact that, look, Dan mentioned earlier that he's a single payer person. I said,
so well, am I.
I said, you know, this is a step in that direction. And it's a logical one in terms of what it will do in terms of quality of care, accessibility, and affordability for American citizens.
You know, this to me, you know, politics drives you nuts. Mm. But this to me, Congressman, is a plan that both parties can work on.
Exactly.
And be a tremendous plus for the American people. I don't see why you guys will put it together.
Well, Brad, I know Congressman Courtney has to go. Don't mean to cut you off. So, Congressman, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up this segment?
No, well, you know, first of all, I thank you for, you know, giving us a chance to talk about this publicly. And at the end of the day, I think that's, you know, the external noise, I think, really still matters as much as people may think the place is, you know, impervious to it all. And we're going to keep at it. And, you know, as things go along, I'm sure John and myself can give you updates in terms of I think we're going to see some, you know, strong support when we get back in town September 5th in terms of co-sponsorship. And I, again, just appreciate the opportunity to be on the show this morning with my great friend, John Larson, who, you know, again, over and over again, he's about building coalitions. That's the other reason why I feel good about this is John is a, you know, just a really smart, well-liked guy in D.C. in terms of, you know, the colleagues, the member-to-member relationships. And I would say never underestimate that aspect of this effort as well. So have a great, you know, rest of the show, and I'll be back, I promise.
Thank you.
Thanks, Congressman.
See you later, Joe.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
This is a pretty good team, huh?
Oh, Joe Courtney, you know, well, listen.
They come out of Connecticut,
so
though.
We used to call him two sub Joe. Now he's three sub Joe.
That's so right.
You talk about turning around the economy for the state of Connecticut. And for, you know, that we have more suppliers, manufacturers who supply General Dynamics and the subs here in the first congressional district than they do even in the London. I always kiddingly remind Joe of that. So, but his efforts in that area alone, and, of course, he's our lead person in Congress on the Armed Services Committee, and you know how vitally important that is with, you know, Pratt & Whitney and General Dynamics, United Technologies, Command, Sikorsky. I can go down the list, but that is the backbone of our manufacturing base here, and we couldn't be better served with somebody who's brought so much experience and depth of knowledge. And, you know, it takes dedication, and Joe is there all the time pounding away on these issues.
Congressman, how long does it take? Because I get so excited, and I know Dan. How long does it take to get something like this through?
Well, Brad, it's probably the $64,000 question. I think Joe's right. What we've seen is now that you've had, I think the curtain has finally been pulled back, and people are saying, okay, repeal and replace is over. How are we going to now focus on taking the existing law and making it better? I don't hear anyone on either side saying, let's take the existing law and make it worse. You know?
Right.
So let's take the existing law and make it better. And how can we do that? And I think the signs are encouraging. And I do think, in the end, the president can step in. And I think first, from the Secretary Price's standpoint, make sure that we do stabilize these markets because they're in danger of falling apart. And that would be a shame for the 22 to 24 million people that are impacted by this. Why not strengthen them and, in fact, come up with a cost solution that lowers the cost that the Trump administration could take credit for? They fixed the problem and lowered the costs and made it more accessible for people 50 to 64 years old to get insurance.
Again, Congressman, it comes back to the politics of it. As you know, Senator Graham is on television yesterday, Lindsey Graham saying if the Republicans don't repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, they're going to pay the price at the polls next year. So it's back to that same old argument, even though we just had that debate.
Yeah, and usually Senator Graham is one of the more reasonable voices down there, too. And I do think, because you've heard both committees say in the Senate and the House, when they come back, they're going to be looking. Now, mind you, it's been 7 years, and leading up to this vote, there were no public hearings. There's no public input. But once this starts to get out amongst the public, people are able to put that kind of pressure on their members of Congress. And when you have a common sense solution, it's not going to cost anyone. It's minimally revenue neutral. I would claim that with the 50 to 60 billion we can get by cracking down on the inefficiencies and waste, and these are well documented. I'm not making these numbers up. Then you can actually enhance and make stronger the Medicare program while lowering the costs for both age groups in this instance, and have something I hope the American people will feel proud of.
You know, Congressman Larson, when you stop to think about how easy but yet how difficult it is sometimes, and I think and I think Dan would agree with this, if we can get through the politics of this, this could be one of the bright, shining stars for the United States. It really, really could save money and take care of people.
Well, absolutely, Brad. And I think increasingly, as people look at this, first and foremost from a health standpoint, and then when you look at it from a financial and economic standpoint, you're not passing costs on to future generations. You're, in fact, enhancing and improving an existing program, Medicare. And you're providing for so many Americans in transition, and obviously a great group of them, the baby boomers, are now coming through this process.
That's the key.
That's right.
And they have a voice. And so I think they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. Why can't we have this as a way to solve the problem? And it embraces a lot of the concepts that both parties are calling for. When you talk about making sure that waste, fraud, and abuse, that there's a crackdown, when you're talking about making sure that there's volume discounts, when you're reducing the costs overall, and also when you're providing quality care. All of these are accomplished in what we're attempting to do, and we're hopeful.
And Congressman John Larson with us, Paul in Waterbury. Paul, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Congressman Larson.
Good morning, Paul.
Other gentlemen with you today. I have one quick question, gentlemen. My wife and I are both on Medicare Part A and B. Mm-hmm. As you know, throughout the years, we paid like almost 1.5% of our income towards Medicare, and our employer matched it. My question is this, sir, and then I'll kindly hang up and listen to your answer. My wife and I's payments together come to $2,500 a year. I'm not complaining about that. Right. When I'm complaining about that, that is considered taxable income. Could you explain why it's taxable income? And thank you very much. It's a great show, gentlemen.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your question. And you're number one, grateful that both of you are on Medicare and receiving the kind of care that you're receiving. And with regard to why it's considered taxable income, I have to be honest. I can't give you a direct answer with respect to that. But if you'll call my office at 860-278-8888, we'll be glad to sit down with you and your wife. In fact, you're in Waterbury with Elizabeth Esty, and we'll work with you to see why that's the case, not knowing all the parameters and all the circumstances and what's going on there. It's hard to say on a talk show like this, but what I can guarantee you is that we'll roll up our sleeves and work with you and see if we can assist in any way.
What is that number again, John? 860-278-8888. 860-Paul, take it down, 860-278-8888.
Easy number to remember. Congressman, one of the things I hear about people who obviously are on Medicare and have to pick up the cost of Part B is that that cost continues to go up, and it's eating up more of their Social Security check each month. How do we control that?
Well, I think one of the ways we control it is by getting after the waste, abuse. Now, imagine in healthcare across the world, you know, most countries are spending as part of their GDP anywhere between 8 and 9%. The gold standard for the world is like Switzerland, and they're paying somewhere around 12% of their GDP. We're at almost 19% of our GDP. And where is the inefficiencies coming from? They're coming from all areas. And this is what the studies are all showing. And that's why we're coming up with the figure of $50 to $60 billion, because Reuters estimated, Dan, years ago, back in 2009 and 2010 when the debate was raging, that there was anywhere between $700 to $800 billion annually in waste and inefficiency. Now, the whole cost of the Affordable Care Act over 10 years was $900 billion. So just by driving those costs down, and including using volume discounts on prescription drugs, as we were talking about, and Medicare should do, but getting the inefficiencies out of the system. Now, the Affordable Care Act started to do an awful lot of that, and a lot of the hospitals and others are changing along the way as well. But if we don't constantly focus on driving down the cost, it spills over, and then, as you point out, you get banged from your Social Security on that. So that's the whole key, is driving down those costs. And if you look at what our program proposes to do, it does exactly that by, you know, both making the older population younger and the younger population real young and insurable. So we ought to be able to drive those costs down. And we have a special commission that's set up inside, not just, you know, to access what the Affordable Care Act did with going after a lot of the fraud that exists out there. But by fraud, we just don't mean people who are ripping off the system, but the inefficiencies that exist, the mistakes that are made in billing, the need for automation, the need for the left hand to know what the right hand is doing. All of these things, I think if you had a doctor, if you had a hospital, if you had the insurance companies on here, pharma, medical devices, they would all acknowledge the same thing, that there's a lot of overlap.
So there will be a change.
Exactly.
There will be a change. What's wrong with a change?
Well,
if it's a good change.
I have no problem with it, Brett.
I don't either.
You don't have to sell me on it. It's the people in the Congress you got to sell.
I know.
You got that right.
Well, thanks a million. I'm glad that you folks will continue to come on with the two of us.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to coming back and talking about the progress of the tunnel. We're going to have Chairman Schuster
Terrific.
Up here in September. And as you know, you probably are aware of this, I think the MDC is starting its drilling.
That's right.
For a 4.5-mile tunnel, 120 feet under the ground.
Wow.
So this is eminently doable, and we're looking forward to coming back on that.
Thanks, Congressman.
Congressman, thank you so much. Always great to see you.